So, when did you first fall in love with hip hop? That is a question that's asked in one of my favorite movies, Brown Sugar. If y'all don't know, Brown Sugar is the movie to watch. It features Sanaa Lathan and Taye Diggs, and it's really a rom-com, but to me, it's much more. To me, it was the first time that I realized that writing about music and living in New York City was a possibility. The first opening scene was Sanaa Lathan when she was a young girl going to a park and witnessing so many people expressing the five elements of hip hop. You had people breaking, you had people engaged in ciphers, and you just had everybody just listening in the whole community there. And so that's when I realized, like, okay, this is what I wanna do. This is something that I love, and this is something that I feel like I can do for my life. So I decided that was the route that I was gonna take. Because I always was interested in writing. I always loved reading. I always loved writing. I mean, ever since I was 5 years old, I would write my own story, so much so that I asked my parents for a typewriter when I was five. Because I felt like to be a legit writer, I needed to have the tools to do so. And so they gave me this cream and crimson typewriter, but it only typed in uppercase letters, and I was so pissed because I was like, this is not grammatically correct. How am I supposed to do this? So the punctuation and everything is off. But in any case, I was very thankful. But I knew that New York was the place that I needed to be. I mean, one of my all-time favorite artists of all time, I mean, rapping, poetry, acting, everything is from New York City. Tupac Shakur, if y'all don't really realize, you know, his family. He started there, he moved to Baltimore, moved to California, but originally, you know, he's from New York. But in any case, so I knew I had to go. But I am the youngest of six. My parents had me when they were young, when they were in their early to mid-20s. So I knew that the only way that I would be able to get to my dream was through something else I love, which is education. You know, like, reading and writing, like I said, just came naturally to me. I love school. Not so much math, but I love school. So I knew that that was the way that I would get there. So I focused. I drilled down. I did really well in school. I was always in honors classes and AP classes, and so much so that by the time I got to high school, I ended up going to Baltimore City College High School, City Forever, as y'all know. Yes, one of the best schools ever. But, and the whole theme of City is to prepare you for college, right? To help you get there. And I never, I guess, like I said, never let that dream go. I would always watch certain things or certain shows, like Felicity. I used to love Felicity. And I love the fact that she came from a small town and then moved to, granted, she came there for love, but she came from a small town and moved to, you know, New York City and explored the city and all the elements and everything, and I just knew that that was my life. So by the time I got into my senior year of high school, I decided that this was my chance. So I went to apply to NYU. But I also had to be realistic. Like I said, I'm the youngest of six, and I'm a first-generation college grad. And so my parents, especially my dad, was a little concerned about me moving to the city by myself. So he always encouraged me to, you know, try to apply for some local schools. So I applied to Maryland, University of Maryland College Park. And I'd been there several times, but always at night. I was in band at City, and so we always would have, like, shows and competitions there, but I'd never seen the campus in the daylight. And one day, my father and I drove up, and I saw the campus, and I saw that big M as soon as you drive on the campus, and I said, oh my gosh, this is what college is. This is what, like, you see on TV, and you see in the movies, and everything. I'm like, this right here, it makes me feel like I made it, right? But again, New York was always in the back of my mind. Needless to say, it always comes down to money, right? So, I got a full ride to Maryland. I applied there, I got a full ride. That prompted me to stop applying to NYU. I did not finish my application because I was like, okay, obviously I'm going to Maryland. Like, I'm not going to turn away free money. So I went there, but again, the dream never left. By the time I got to my senior year of Maryland, I hadn't decided exactly what I was going to do I was really tired, honestly. I'd always been a part of the advanced courses, the IB courses, like constantly pushing myself to do better and to do more. And even when I decided I was going to take a break educationally, I just picked up additional internships and picked up additional writing things, which was also draining. So by the time I got to my senior year, I was like, well, I think I need to take a break. I don't really want to go to grad school. That's never really been my thing, but what am I going to do? I can't be in New York without purpose. Like, I have to have a reason to be there. So I applied to Columbia University. I figured if I'm going to do it and I'm going to go, I might as well go big and go home. You know, like, it was number one on U.S., you know, News and World Report. So I was like, oh, this, I must go here. This is the best school. And I wasn't crazy. I chose a backup school, City University of New York. I toured the school. I was super excited. Mind you, I didn't go to New York until the first time I went to New York was when I was in college. So this was always, like I said, a dream, something that I always wanted to do, that I lived through, like television and movies and Tupac, but I'd never actually been there. So, but once I got into college, I went and I was like, yeah, this is definitely for me. But in any case, once I applied to City University of New York and applied to Columbia, maybe by my like fall semester of my senior year, I realized that I wasn't getting in at CUNY. They did not accept me. I wasn't getting in. And so I knew that meant that I wasn't getting into Columbia. So I had to figure out what I was going to do next. Fast forward, I got waitlisted for Columbia. I'm like, okay, I'm definitely not getting in. If I'm on a waitlist, it's not happening. But by the time we got to the end of the senior year, it was maybe like a month before school ended. I was in a friend of mine's dorm room and just relaxing, chilling, thinking about, okay, well, what are you going to do next? I happened to check my email. Apparently, I wasn't really good at that. Apparently, I got an email from Columbia for 3 days ago, you know, 3 days prior, but I never opened it. And when I did open it, it said, congratulations, and I just, like, went bonkers. I yelled and screamed and cried, and I was like, oh, my gosh, I got in. Oh, my gosh, I got in. How could I get in? Are they crazy? Like, what's going on? Like, I have to go, right? Like, I must go. Like, how can I go? Like, I have to go. And then I had to think about, like, how could I get there? Like, financially, I'm really broke. So how can I start my life? How can I get there? But I knew that I was going to go. That was never a question. I just had to figure it out how to get there. So I had a plan. I said, okay, I have like about 3 months before I have to be there at the end of August. I have 3 months to figure it out. So I came back home to Baltimore. I applied for all the jobs I thought I was qualified for. Shoe City, the grocery store, all these different places. Places that I worked in high school, places that I worked in college. But for some reason, I think because they knew that I just graduated, you know, I was really proud to put that on my application. So they knew that I wasn't going to stay, so then they weren't really hiring me. But one of my good friends and I decided we're going to be creative, you know. Like I said, I was in band. We used to do fundraisers and things like that throughout the summer to raise money for the program. So we're very familiar with going outside and asking people to donate. So our plan was to get our father's coolers, go to Sam's Club, get gigantic things of water, and sell these bottles of water to raise money to go to New York City. So we got the coolers, and we got the water, but we didn't get the gumption to go outside and stand on the corner. So we were very hydrated that summer, but we did not sell one bottle of water. But I still had one more asset. I had a 1991 Nissan Sentra. And I told myself that if it got to the end of the summer and I still hadn't made any money, which, you know, I didn't, I was going to sell that car, right? But it was a stick shift. I was very proud of it. I told myself how to drive that stick shift. So I put it on Craigslist, and I said, okay, I have a 1991 Nissan Sentra. It only has 100,000 miles on it, great condition, nice system inside, you know, everything, new clutch, everything. So many bites, so many people said that they wanted it, but majority of them never tried to drive a stick shift. And I was like, I can teach you, it's not hard. No one wanted to take the car. So about a week before I had to leave, I still had no money. But about a week before I had to leave, one of my mom's friends reached out to me and said, okay, I'll buy the car from you for $1,200. And I said, okay, this is great. $1,200. We agreed on this price. We agreed that I would deliver the car before I left. So I did so. You know, the day that I was leaving, my father and I and a friend packed up the U-Haul truck. I was like, I'm so nervous, but I'm going to get there. I'm finally starting my life. I'm finally going to New York. And I just have one more thing I have to do, which is to drop off this car. So we went to drop off the car, and lo and behold, even though she had already driven it, even though she had already seen it, even though she had already rode in it as a passenger, she decided, as I was on my way, that the car was worth $900 and not $1,200. And so I said, well, you know, okay, well, that's all. I have to take it because I have no choice. You know, I'm literally in the U-Haul truck on the way to New York City with $0 in my pockets. So I took the money. I figured I'll have to, you know, have like 5-6 hours to think about what I can do to raise money while I was there. But in any case, I took the money. So we started our journey. We went to New York City. I ended up finding a wonderful apartment in Harlem. At least I thought it was wonderful until I realized that my roommates, two males, by the way, were very not as clean as they portrayed themselves to be. But in any case, when we got there, when we arrived, my father met them. One was an engineer. One was a stand-up comic, very much Seinfeld vibes. Really dope guys. But my father had that conversation with them. Like, you know, this is my baby girl. I'm leaving her here with you. I know what you look like. I've taken a picture of your IDs. Don't leave her. You know, don't, you know, throw her off. So I'm like, okay, cool. So the issue came the first moment that I was there. Because my rent was $800. Mind you, said I had $900, right? So I gave the $800 to my Seinfeld roommate. And I had $100 left. At that, around that time, the subway system, the ticket for a monthly pass was about $70. There was no option. You know, I sold my car. I was going to New York. I didn't need a car. So how would I get around? I had to buy that monthly pass. So, bought it. Now I had $30. Obviously, my diet for the next month or two was ramen. But I got there. So, that night, my first night there, my father and I, we caught the train to Port Authority. You know, we said our goodbyes. He was, like, very nervous, very a little somber, but very also, like, excited and proud of me. And I was, too. I was like, okay, this is something I've always wanted to do since I was, like, 5 years old. I can't believe I kind of made it. But I have to figure out how to stay, right? So he leaves. I go home, and I realize I have a month to figure it out. But I did. I made it. I ended up finding two jobs, one working as a barista, classic, you know, New York vibes, Felicity vibes. So one, working as a barista. The other job, working in the call center at Columbia, asking people, hey, you know, I know you just graduated, but would you like to donate? So there was that person. And at the end of the day, I ended up, you know, doing a wonderful job. I graduated from Columbia. It led me to an internship that I would not have gotten any other way at NPR, working at the New York, the Weekend Edition. I was able to write stories about Shorty Rock, one of self-proclaimed, you know, New York City's first out hip-hop artists. I wrote stories about Fat Beats, which was the landmark vinyl shop where artists would come and debut their records and would come and have ciphers and just have, like, chill. So I was very excited to be able to do that. And then it also led me to creating my own magazine called Treble Truth, which I write profile stories about artists. So even though I came to New York with $900, I left with so much more. Thank you.